more. Baby, it's not nice. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are grass may dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on this week. We've had the Roger Stone trial that was uncovered, that the four person that was head of the, jury, was highly biased and so forth. We've had, McCabe, they've deferred, to press charges on Andrew McCabe. Barr and Trump got into a bit of a brouhaha over him tweeting something about this ongoing over this Roger Stone trial. And so there's a lot going on. Bloomberg is being outed as friendly, very overly friendly to the Chinese. In fact, they rolled over him. I've already mentioned Roger Stone trial may be redone or whatever. Yahweh, the communists are being accused of having backdoors in their equipment. Maria Bartiromo has an excellent interview on that. The coronavirus is still breaking out. I have some comments on that. But what we're going to do is we're going to start with Newt Gingrich and his thoughts overall on several issues. And then we'll go to Ingram. Laura Ingram has an excellent, you could say, expose of the Chinese problem. And then we'll go to Maria Bartiromo and Yahweh. Okay, and then we'll get on with other things. Here we go with Newt Gingrich. And he lays out some really explosive things.
Let's bring in Newt Gingrich. He's a Fox News contributor. He's a former Speaker of the House. He's a former Republican presidential candidate. And he writes a free newsletter available at Gingrich360.com. Mr. Speaker, we were talking earlier about it. It sounds like the Democrats are looking for another reason to perhaps impeach the president. Is that how you see it, or are they just trying to muddy the water?
No, I think that ever since about 10 o'clock on election night, most liberals in this country wake up every morning knowing that Trump has done something horrible. They just don't know what it is yet, but they're confident they'll find it during the day. And so this is the latest. I mean, cleaning out the National Security Council, totally within his rights. That was an outrage. This is an outrage. Imagine people like these who go through their life being outraged over nothing. I mean, what will happen to them when they finally run into a real outrage? Mm-hmm. You'll notice, by the way, that when Hillary Clinton's staffer takes a hammer to physically destroy the hard drive of a computer, which I would have thought was obstruction of justice, nothing happens. We have had no action yet on the FBI agents who lied to the FISA court, which is, by the way, also a felony, mm-hmm. and very certainly comparable to what Stone is being attacked for. But you get on this list, and somehow, if you're a conservative, and Sidney Powell's written two books on this, from the standpoint of having worked in the Justice Department, that the level of corruption among some of the career professionals is amazing, and they're perfectly willing to use that bias. This case with Stone is truly absurd, as the former acting attorney general pointed out. For a guy for whom this is a first offense, a nonviolent offense, not drug-related, not violent crime-related, to be given as a recommendation the maximum sentence is truly extraordinary.
So I guess that's one of the things they're worried about. Among the people among the people upset by the New York Times today, they worry a firewall has been broken where the president weighs in. They assume, tell the DOJ what to do, and the DOJ acts on the president's wants. They worry about our system crashing into itself.
Well, first of all, the President of the United States has in the Constitution the unfettered power to pardon anybody he wants to for any reason. So if he really wanted to intervene, he could just issue a pardon, and it would be over.
Yep.
But he hasn't done that.
And ultimately, it's up to a judge anyway.
Yeah. You know, so the actual sentencing will be by a judge. But I do think any reasonable person, which excludes most of the Democrats, but any reasonable person would look at this and say, this is a real abuse of power by some career lawyers who are anti-Trump, going after a Trump supporter at a level which they would never apply.
Yeah,
to somebody who had supported Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the race, because Joe Biden, everyone thought he was going to win. You know, he was going to be the nominee. He was front runner a few months ago, and now he's down in South Carolina. He came in fifth in New Hampshire, fourth in Iowa, and he's throwing out some more TV appearances, trying to rebound from those losses. Do you think it's a lost cause?
I think the only chance that Biden has to get back in the game is to have two debate performances or two debates between now and South Carolina. He has to be so up on his game, so aggressive, so practiced, so willing to slug it out, that people look up and go, wow, that's the Joe Biden I wasn't aware of. If he just sleepwalks through these two debates, I think that at that point he's basically gone. He won't have the resources. He won't be able to compete. And I've seen no indication yet that they understand that this is life and death for his career, and that the only way he can turn it around is to stand on the same stage with Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Sanders and beat them and be convincing that he's the right guy. And I doubt very much if he's capable of doing that.
Well, and in fact, Newt, to your point, it was the debate on Friday night in the state of New Hampshire where he, Joe Biden, was not good, and she, Amy Klobuchar, was good. A lot of the Biden people apparently went to her, the late deciders. But going forward, the lead story right now in the New York Times, Newt, is Democrats' split deepens anxiety among centrists, because right now Bernie Sanders is the face of the party. And as the party centrists know, Bernie Sanders, the socialist, can't win.
Well, I don't want to go quite that far yet. I think it's not likely that he could win, and it's probable that he would be beaten in sort of a George McGovern disaster of carrying one or two states. But look, you're about to have Bloomberg as the new face of the Democratic Party.
Yep.
Bloomberg has hired 2,100 people. He is spending at least $1 billion. I was just looking a little while ago at various people who are on Twitter who are doing all sorts of weird things. And Bloomberg is now buying ads on some of the weirdest sites in America.
Influencers.
I think he's spending $1 million
a day drown the
on
system.
Social media.
Yeah. So he will spend more on social media than the entire Klobuchar campaign.
So new.
And that doesn't count TV advertising and staff and everything else.
So the problem is,
I think what you're going to see happen by Super Tuesday, you're going to begin to realize how big a threat Bloomberg is.
And the word is, some people believe Biden is releasing all this opposition research video and sound on Bloomberg on his past exploits. As a Republican mayor, then an independent mayor, then a Democratic mayor, he was for stop and frisk, said some harsh things about minority communities. Then he's for bragging about destroying coal plants. That can translate to a lot of jobs. And then in redlining, he talked about how financing, forcing banks to give financing to people not worthy in redlining help perpetuate the 2008 collapse of the economy. All these things are out there, which are defendable. But Bloomberg has to figure out, does he want to defend it or apologize for it?
Well, that's right. Now, the other example, which will be fascinating, is what percent of his fortune came from cutting deals with the dictatorship in China? When the Chinese dictatorship put pressure on Bloomberg News, they caved totally. And he basically said, look, we're not going to print anything which makes the Chinese government unhappy. So you have to ask yourself, what share of the money he's going to spend to try to buy the presidency actually came from China, because of his willingness to be cozy with the dictatorship.
Right. That is fascinating because the president tough on China famously, and Democrats were saying that the president's even tough on China, and that helps their cause. So they're going to be twisted into a pretzel trying to find a candidate.
Newt, real quick question about the people who voted in the Republican primary up in New Hampshire. The president did like 70,000 more than Barack Obama did as an incumbent. Why are so many of the party faithful showing up to support the president who doesn't really need it in the primary?
I think two things, and I would say that Brad Parscale and the team that they've assembled have done an amazing job of reaching out to people, building these huge rallies. But I think there are two big drivers. One is there are a lot of people in America who are really proud of Donald Trump, and they're really excited by what he's achieving, and they really want to show that they're with him because they realize it's a fight. The other, frankly, is you don't mind my using the language, there are a lot of people just plain pissed off at the way the House Democrats have behaved, the way the thing you just said a minute ago from Elizabeth Warren, and I think they want to go out and sort of get in the face of the Democrats and say, yeah, you want to have a real fight? Well, we're ready to have a real fight. And I think the story you had a little while ago about the guy who drives a truck into a Republican volunteer tent. Well, I mean, it may be a shock to our Democratic friends, but we get pretty irritated when people drive trucks into our sites.
Right.
And, you know, one of the ways you get even is you turn out and vote and prove that Donald Trump, he did better than Reagan, he did better than Carter, he did better than Clinton, he did better than George W. Bush, and he did better than Obama. The best turnout for an incumbent in modern times in New Hampshire.
All right, well, he was pretty strong, too, but the turnout overall made Democrats happy, was strong in New Hampshire. So then they feel a little bit better as they head to Nevada, where we haven't really seen some recent polling. It's an exciting time, Speaker. Everyone's fighting with everybody.
Thank you for joining us.
It's amazing.
Yep.
You won't be bored.
Absolutely not. Every day's new.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. All right.
A little bumper music leading into Laura Ingraham's Bloomberg China cabinet. She takes Bloomberg apart. So here we go with a little bit of bumper music leading into that.
Focus of tonight's angle. After Iowa's counting chaos and slim wins for Pete and Bernie in the first two nominating contests, and after Biden's campaign collapse, you can kind of feel things changing in the Democrat Party. You can feel it, and you can hear it. I'm talking about the murmurs for Mike, the banter for Bloomy.
The big winner last night could be Mayor Bloomberg.
Well, Bloomberg looks well positioned now to swoop in.
He wasn't given his money like Donald Trump was. He earned it the old-fashioned way.
He's done more to reduce violence, not only in his own city, but cities across America, more than any single living person.
Mike Bloomberg can win this campaign. Donald Trump knows it. He's afraid.
Well, Bloomberg, in a way, is everything that they love. Where Trump is a proud nationalist, Bloomberg's a citizen of the world. He's a globalist from Manhattan who isn't fazed by mass abortions, but agonizes over the climate.
No matter what you think of climate change, that it really has a potential to destroy our world, which means stopping polluting and all of those kinds of things.
If you want 32 ounces, take 2 cups to your seed. If you want 64, carry 4. But our hope is if you only take 1, you won't go back.
Oh, this is going to be fun. What's not to like?
Well, a lot, actually. And it's not just that he's bad on guns, bad on immigration, terrible on health care and our food choices. Bloomberg's really bad when it comes to our chief economic and military threat. I'm talking about China. In fact, he can't even bring himself to use the correct words to describe their government.
The Communist Party wants to stay in power in China, and they listen to the public. When the public says, I can't breathe the air, Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents, or he's not going to survive.
He's not a dictator?
No, he has a constituency to answer to. No government survives without the will of the majority of its people.
The idea that the Chinese government is responsive to sort of a democratic expression of fresh air, clean air.
Oh, come on, of course they are.
That, in and of itself, should tell us all he should never be president. They're responsive, the Chinese government? Oh, not to the people. Oh, to the dictatorship. Oh, okay, that makes it okay. Now, as he said this, remember, China was in the midst of a brutal suppressing of the pro-democracy demonstration in Hong Kong. And as we were just learning at the time, the true extent of China's vast array of concentration camps for those Uyghur Muslims. Bloomberg has been getting increasingly tight, though, with the Chinese for years. He loves their massive marketplace, and they love his money and influence in the United States.
I first met him 15 years ago at a dinner in my house when he was the mayor of Beijing. Today, he is the most influential political figure in China and in the world. Please join me in welcoming the Vice President of China, Wang Qishan.
His gushing over China's vice president took place at the New Economy Forum that Bloomberg's company holds every year. Now, guess where they hosted this 2019 conference? Why, Beijing, of course, of course. I'm telling you, keep your eye on Bloomberg's business activities in China. They're actually increasing as he's running for president. Democrats might not be asking any questions about this, but Newt Gingrich sure is.
What percent of his fortune came from cutting deals with the dictatorship in China? What share of the money he's going to spend to try to buy the presidency actually came from China because of his willingness to be cozy with the dictatorship?
While China was cheating at trade, stealing our intellectual property, and putting American companies out of business, Bloomberg was helping Beijing get richer and more powerful. The Washington Post is reporting Bloomberg, while showering praise on the Communist Party leaders, whose goodwill is required to play a role in the fast-growing market, led efforts since 2015 to make it easier for U.S. companies to trade in Chinese currency and expanded one of his company's financial indexes, which could steer $150 billion into China while earning his firm an undisclosed amount in fees. Oh, my friends. We're talking billions and billions of dollars in fees made in communist China. And here's a fun little fact. Bloomberg's operations rake in more money each year from China and Hong Kong than all of the businesses of the Trump Organization combined that they made in all of 2018. So with all of this, whom do you think China's rooting for in November? Do they want the current president, who's forced them to make concessions on trade, the one who slapped tariffs on them? Or would they want the guy who will basically give them everything they want? Follow the tweets from the mayor's media company for any length of time, and you'll see it's constantly pushing a pro-China agenda. They've even been called out for spiking stories critical of Beijing over at Bloomberg. Look at this headline about the coronavirus from last week. China sacrifices a province to save the world from coronavirus. And this one. The U.S. charges a leading nanoscientist with lying about his work with the Thousand Talents program. Will China's most brilliant minds balk at coming to America? So you get the idea. Now, it will be hilarious, but not completely surprising, if it ends up being Bloomberg versus Trump. Now, think about it. Democrats, the self-anointed champions of human rights, choosing a pro-China guy as their nominee. They're also supposedly pro-American worker. So how would it look to pick a guy who will just end up making it easier for companies here to ship jobs over there? And my goodness, how will it make the squad feel if their party runs one New York billionaire against another billionaire? The answer? Not well.
It's physically impossible. The whole thing is a joke.
You guys are crazy!
This is simply a disruption and a distraction.
You get the point. They're not going to be happy, and that's the angle.
Boy, that was hard-hitting from Laura Ingraham. Next is Maria Bartiromo, and she's going to tell us about these back doors and Yahweh's equipment and so forth, talking to a top executive of Yahweh. But anyway, she says, well, her one of the questions she keeps asking, well, aren't your directors and your people that are on the board of directors all communists, or a few of them are Communist Party members? He won't even answer that question. Here we go now.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration's battle against Chinese telecom giant Huawei intensifying this morning. This comes on the heels of the revelation that Huawei reportedly has even more access to information, possibly about you, than previously thought. Intel sources say that they've known for years that Huawei builds covert access for the Chinese government into its mobile hardware, software, and systems known in the cyber world as backdoors. Joining me right now is Huawei Technologies Chief Security Officer Andy Purdy. And Andy, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming back this morning.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
So you and I have had this discussion over and over again about back doors, and I mentioned to you in our last interview, in fact, talking about Vodafone, talking about what happened in Africa, in Europe, where there are back doors within Huawei equipment that allows the data to go right back to the communist government. You have said over and over that it's just not true. Now we have confirmation from the federal government. Your reaction?
Well, I think it's fantastic news that the United States has decided to declassify this information that they've been providing to our allies without being able to convince them. So I would ask the U.S., please release the so-called evidence. Because as Deutsche Telekom, as Vodafone Germany said, they're not worried. They provide the equipment that's necessary for lawful intercept. Our equipment doesn't do that. We do not have that access. And that's the facts. And so I'd encourage the U.S. government to bring their so-called evidence
forward.
Well,
wait a second. We actually do have evidence, and you know that. Your company has settled with a number of technology companies as a result of this, among other issues, not to mention the theft of intellectual property. And we know Vodafone Italy had this issue. Vodafone Italy found out that there were backdoors, and then they had to raise their hand, tell Huawei executives, there are backdoors here. And then you did some kind of an adjustment, and you said that you changed the back door. So we actually do indeed have evidence that there are back doors, Andy, and you know that. You're the chief security officer.
Well, last time I was on your show, I encouraged you. I even offered to let you use my phone to call Vodafone Italy, because Vodafone Italy does not believe that Huawei had back doors. They do not believe that what you just said is true. But the great thing is the U.S. government has so-called declassified this new evidence, as they continue to try to come up with a smoking gun, which they don't have. Can't you join me, Maria, in asking the U.S. government to release this unclassified information?
I don't need to see any unclassified information. I've already heard from these companies and their CEOs many times, Andy. And when I look at Vodafone, the reason that Vodafone is now on a neutral level is because you settled with them, and these settlements ensure that they have to cease and desist and not discuss the case anymore.
Vodafone has said publicly, and recently in response to this Wall Street Journal article, that they are not worried, that they provide the equipment that allows the lawful intercept from our equipment. We don't provide that equipment. Without their equipment, there can be no access.
Okay, so
we can't access the information.
Here's a story that I have in front of me from Vodafone Group PLC. Vodafone Group PLC has acknowledged that it has found vulnerabilities going back years with the equipment supplied by Shenzhen-based Huawei for the carrier's Italian business. While Vodafone says the issues were resolved, the revelation may further damage the reputation of a major symbol of China's global technology prowess. This is a Bloomberg story. Why don't you Google it?
All equipment has vulnerabilities. That's different than an intentional malicious backdoor, Maria,
well,
and you know
all
that.
All equipment has vulnerability? All equipment does not have back doors to the Chinese Communist government. Why do you have so many back doors going to the Chinese government, the communist government, so that anybody's data is out there and goes right back to the Chinese government? We know this. Huawei is a Chinese company. If you can't go against China's rule, are you going to say to Xi Jinping, oh, we're not going to put a back door in this? Are you going to go up against that, even though we know that Chinese companies have to listen to the communist government of China?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, when you look at this situation, look at it in the macro sense, the United States is trying to hurt China by hurting Huawei. Clearly, the United States is hurting America more than it's hurting Huawei. And the United States will not think dispassionately about what is most important to the United States in terms of the competition with China. The United States will not create a technology innovation policy. They will not think dispassionately about the impact of our ability to sell to the U.S.
Come on, Andy. The chairman of your company is a member of the Communist Party. The chairman of your company is a member of the Communist Party, correct?
We can put in evidence.
How many board members on Huawei's board are members of the Communist Party?
I have no idea, Maria. But we can put it. We can prove that our equipment is not subject to any influence for the China government, and we can prove that our employees are not subject to that new envelope.
Because I've got this right here. Europe's biggest phone company identified hidden backdoors in the software that could have given Huawei unauthorized access to the carrier's fixed line network in Italy, a system that provides internet service to millions of homes. It's pretty clear that Huawei wants to set up all the infrastructure in all of the as many countries as will allow it by giving them cheap infrastructure so that then they have the backdoors into all of this data, and the Chinese government, the communist government, can steal data and get smarter in terms of how others are doing their business or whatever it is that the communist government wants this data for.
Apparently, most of the world does not agree with you. Most of the world does not believe there is such evidence. We have testing mechanisms in place in the United Kingdom, in Bonn, in Brussels, in Canada, where the equipment can be tested. The former deputy to the DNI said, we can find back doors, and we have mechanisms in place for accessing data. We can prove that our data is only subject to total control by the carriers. Every keystroke that we access is recorded. They know whether what we access, and they know what we do with it. Yeah. So we can prove we're not subject to the undue influence of the China government.
You can prove that because you've got Chinese communists on the board and running the company. The chairman of the board is a member of the Communist Party. You have several board members that are members, official members of the Chinese Communist Party, Andy. You should know this, and I know you do know this because you're the chief security officer.
But, Maria, you're not listening to what I'm saying. I know you think you are, but you're not.
Okay.
The fact is there are mechanisms in place where independent experts can test the software for vulnerabilities and can test for backdoors.
Okay.
And regarding the updates to the equipment, independent experts can evaluate the updates. They can make sure that there's no improper access by Huawei to any customer.
So where were these independent experts when Vodafone found the back doors? Where were these independent experts when others throughout Europe and Africa found the back doors after you installed free infrastructure in African nations? Where were these independent experts? And by the way, who are these independent experts? I'd like to have them on the show.
Sure, I'll get you names of companies that are independent experts. I don't know the names off the top of my head, Marie. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me ask you this, because the Pentagon reportedly set to back new U.S. restrictions on Huawei technologies, reversing earlier opposition to the proposal meant to further crack down on exports. How has this impacted the company, Andy?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your question.
Well, we have now new restrictions on Huawei equipment. How has it impacted your company? The Pentagon is set to back these new restrictions on Huawei technologies.
Well, there are two issues. There's our ability to sell, and what you're talking about is the ability of up to 300 American companies want to sell to Huawei. The Department of Defense had interposed objections to the commerce rule, as did Treasury, that would further limit the ability of American companies to sell to Huawei. We purchase about $11 billion a year. The fact is, and I've just come back from detailed meetings at headquarters in Shenzhen, it's clear that while the impact on Huawei, there will be an impact of the fact that we can't buy those technologies. And we would like to come back and buy them. But what is certain is we're going to be fine. Our plan B is working well. We're going to be incredibly successful, even if we don't buy from American companies. And America is going to lose. The U.S. has to think about what is going to benefit the U.S. the most. what are the consequences of these decisions, and what kind of risk mitigation can be put in place.
Andy,
those discussions
Andy,
need
Andy,
to be had.
There, you know what civil fusion is, where any technology going into China has to first go to the military. You know the Chinese aspirations to be the number one superpower in the world, both economically and militarily. Your products are enabling other companies to allow access into their data so that the Chinese government can have those goals and achieve those goals. It's very clear, and now more people know this. Secretary Pompeo just gave a speech last week to the governors about what the Chinese government is doing, and your company is an arm of the Chinese government. You cannot go against the Chinese government and say, we're not going to have a back door, we're not going to give access so that the data goes back to the Chinese government. It's against the law. You're going to go fight with Xi Jinping on this?
Experts know that we can test. Independent experts can test for
backdoors.
How are
you testing it? How you're testing it. What are the tests?
Talk to Domain 5, for example, where they do a complete breakdown of the code. Why do you think Nokia and Ericsson are allowed to do business in the United States despite their deep ties to China, including deep ties to the China government? Because there's a government-monitored risk mitigation, including independent testing of their products. We want to talk about that with
the
U.S. government.
Why did you settle with umpteen 10-plus companies in terms of intellectual theft? Why all the settlements? Motorola, Cisco, Ericsson, across the board, American companies have said, Microsoft, we had the former CEO on this program saying that the theft of intellectual property from China costs the company tens of billions of dollars every year. Why all the settlements? And then those settlements include a cease and desist letter to those CEOs saying you cannot discuss what just went on.
But Maria, let's be fair. Let's look at the history of that industry, the telecommunications mobile industry. Let's look at the number of
I don't need to look at the history of the industry, Andy. I'm looking at Huawei Technologies, the open doors that allow the data to go back to the Chinese government, and I'm looking at the intellectual theft that Huawei has done on all of these telecom companies. What is Huawei anyway? Huawei began because it was the beginnings of a Canadian company, Nortel, which you changed the name of, not you, but your executive. And has changed the name of, and it became Huawei. That was actually a Canadian company.
Consider, let's get the evidence released on this major allegation by the U.S. government. They will not release the information because they do not have evidence.
They're releasing it every day, Andy. Secretary Pompeo was talking to all the governors last week. He's been on this set talking to me about the risks around Huawei. The president, while doing a trade deal, is also telling everybody in America the risks around Huawei. If you want to do business with Huawei, do it with your eyes open because they will steal, they will cheat, and they will have open doors to the Chinese government. We know this, Andy.
Fortunately, the UK government has said they want to take an evidence-based approach. As our closest allies, they are rejecting what the U.S. says. And there's a reason for that. And while they talk in the high-level terms about this most recent allegation, they will not produce facts that demonstrate that they're correct.
All right,
look
Andy,
at the
when
very...
you come back, I hope you can bring some of that evidence with you, because we would all like to see it. I think both sides would benefit from seeing this evidence that you refer to, sir.
Thank you.
We will see you soon. Andy Purdy.
This Chinese juggernaut is dangerous, and we've got to be careful with China. We've got to start standing up, and that's what President Trump has been doing, is standing up. Getting on this, Andrew McCabe, this was a report put together, it explains a little bit of what happened on his releases and leaks and why they benefited Andrew McCabe personally. And so this is an excellent report coming out of Fox and Heritage. And this is her reporting, and it's just excellent. So here we go. Can you give a little bit of background? Recently, they've declined to press charges against Andrew McCabe, the Department of Justice. But this gives you a little background on what he did to generate those possible charges. Some think that they should have pressed charges. Here we go now.
So I'm just going through the report right now to summarize for folks at home. Based on our earlier reporting, we understood that McCabe had violated three ethics violations of the FBI, which was lying under oath, lying not under oath, and then also the disclosure of non-public information. And what we see in the Inspector General's report, the first headline to me is that this actually began as a leak investigation to understand why the Wall Street Journal in October of 2016, so just before the election, disclosed information about the existence of the FBI investigation into the Clinton Foundation. And if you come back to me a moment, the key paragraph, the key section is right here, and it reads in part, "We concluded that McCabe's decision to confirm the existence of the Clinton Foundation investigation through an anonymously sourced quote recounting the content of a phone call with a senior department official in a manner designed to advance his personal interests at the expense of department leadership." So the bottom line is that the former deputy director was in a position to authorize the release of this information, but the inspector general concluded that he did so not because it was in the public interest, but because it was simply in Andrew McCabe's interest to protect his reputation and that of his family as well, Dana.
If I could follow up with you on that, Catherine, just so I can understand. So he's confirming that the Clinton Foundation is under investigation, which
Correct.
Arguably could hurt the Clinton campaign a month before mm-hmm. the election.
Correct.
This is right before James Comey comes out and says, oh, she's also in under investigation because of the emails. So there's another one. What I don't understand is how McCabe announcing that to the press anonymously or confirming that would have advanced his own personal interest. Is there anything that they can tell us that
Sure. Okay.
That?
So, yeah. For a little bit more context, and I perhaps should have offered that to you so it was not in any way confusing. In October of 2016, there was a report in the Wall Street Journal which talked about the political contributions which had been made to Andrew McCabe's wife, Dr. Jill McCabe, which was for a state Senate race in 2015. And she had received from Terry McAuliffe, the Virginia governor, and his PAC at the time, upwards of $500,000. This was seen certainly within law enforcement circles and critics of the FBI as evidence that Andrew McCabe had a conflict of interest when it came to the Clinton email probe. So when you look at the leak about the foundation, that was kind of his way of awkwardly pushing back that he was impartial, not only with the email investigation, but also with the ongoing investigation of the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line as you go through this IG section, this Inspector General report, is that you see he lied on multiple occasions to multiple investigators. First, the leak investigators at the FBI, and then following that to his boss, Director Comey. He told him he was not the source of this leak to the Wall Street Journal, and then ultimately with the Inspector General as well. So it was a pattern and practice of leaks on this particular issue. But again, the key quote here is that he had the authorization to make this information public, but they felt he did not do so for reasons that were within the public interest. He did it for reasons that were to benefit Andrew McCabe, and that they felt was not acceptable.
That's what they said was not acceptable. Since then, this special prosecutor that was assigned on the Clinton Foundation deferred to bring any charges because there was not major violations there. So this whole thing is just a put up job. You know, I mean, like one thing after another, you just can't find in anything that makes sense here. Well, it makes sense if you're going to cover up, if you're running illegal operations, that makes a lot of sense. Recently we've come up with, William Barr and the President Trump have gone after each other. Actually, Barr had an interview here that said that he was a little bit miffed or a few. He didn't say all of the tweets by the president, but he said a few of the tweets. But here we go with Barr being interviewed on ABC, and you'll get to listen to what he has to say about that, and then I'll make some comments. Here we go now.
Good afternoon. We are coming on the air now with breaking news in the Roger Stone case that has consumed the White House and the Department of Justice this week. It unfolded when the line prosecutors in the case recommended Senator Stone, President Trump's longtime friend and political confidant. That came Monday afternoon. Hours later, shortly before 2 a.m. Thursday, President Trump weighed in on Twitter. You see it right there. He called this a horrible, very unfair situation. Cannot allow this miscarriage of justice. Then the Department of Justice announced on Tuesday that they were indeed overruling the prosecutors and recommending a lighter sentence. It was an unprecedented move. All all four prosecutors stepped down in protests. Congressional Democrats have called for investigations. Former justice officials have decried the White House interference, but President Trump responded with another tweet congratulating Attorney General Barr for the decision. Our Chief Justice correspondent Pierre Thomas just completed an exclusive interview with the Attorney General. And Pierre, in your interview, Attorney General Barr insisted he acted independently, but also leveled direct criticism at President Trump.
George, this has been a week unlike any other at the Justice Department, creating a firestorm of controversy. Barr is a strong supporter of President Trump, but he's drawing some lines. I asked him to tweets about criminal cases are causing a problem, and he was blunt, saying he wants them to stop.
To have public statements and tweets made about the department, about our people in the department, our men and women here, about cases pending in the department, and about judges before whom we have cases, make it impossible for me to do my job and to assure the courts and the prosecutors in the department that we're doing our work with integrity.
Mr. Barr, the president does not like to be told what to do. He may not like what you're saying. Are you prepared for those ramifications?
Of course. As I said during my confirmation, I came in to serve as Attorney General. I am responsible for everything that happens in the department, but the thing I have most responsibility for are the issues that are brought to me for decision. And I will make those decisions based on what I think is the right thing to do, and I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody. And I said at the time, whether it's Congress, newspaper, editorial boards, or the president, I'm going to do what I think is right. And, I cannot do my job here at the department with a constant background commentary that undercuts me.
Pierre, an awful lot to unpack right there. Of course, the first thing is that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice did not act to overrule the prosecutors until after the president's tweet came out. Did he offer any evidence that he acted without knowing Trump's wishes?
George, he did not offer specifics, but he was emphatic that he never spoke to the president about Stone or anyone else at the White House. He said he conveyed to the prosecutors that the recommendation for 4 to 7 years in prison was excessive before it was filed, and that when he saw the filing, he immediately made clear to the department officials that it would not stand. But, George, we have yet to hear from any of those prosecutors who stepped down for their version of the story.
Yeah, we'll have to see what they say about that. He also says he won't be bullied by the president or anyone else, but he does have a pretty clear pattern of doing what President Trump wants. When he released the summary of the Mueller report, the Department of Justice recommending a lighter sentence also for Michael Flynn, the president's former national security advisor, and just this week opening up that office, assigning the U.S. attorney in Pittsburgh to follow up on the information collected by Rudy Giuliani in Ukraine. Some critics of the attorney general have said he has indeed been acting like President Trump's defense attorney.
George, we asked him about all that. Barr supports the president's policies and has suggested that he believes the president has been treated unfairly, and he's not shy about making that clear. But he maintains that he believes he's doing what is right and is willing to take the heat from the critics.
He also had some tough words for the prosecutors to step down.
He basically said that their recommendation was wrong and that they were overzealous and that sometimes people working most closely on the cases lose perspective. Again, we have not heard from them yet, George, so we'll have to see what happens. But Barr says this is his call to make as the Attorney General.
Exclusive interview from Pierre Thomas right there, our Chief Justice correspondent. We'll go to Terry Moran, our senior national correspondent at the White House. I assume it hasn't come across on my Twitter yet, no response yet from President Trump or the White House.
Not yet, but we can expect one for sure, because what Attorney General Barr is trying to do here, he is looking at a crisis of confidence in his leadership at the Justice Department, within the Justice Department, and certainly around Washington. He's trying to back the president off a little bit, it seems, about the kinds of tweets the president regularly issues, which are almost directing the Department of Justice to investigate specific American citizens or to do certain things in specific cases. That won't go down well with this president. thinking back, you know, former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson tried to back the president off a little bit from time to time, and he's no longer Secretary of State. Former Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, same thing. This is very thin ice in some ways that the Attorney General is on, and it must be a very serious situation indeed for him to come forward. But right now, at this point, no tweets, no response from the president as of yet.
Thin ice, even though he's acted in accord, Terry, with the president's wishes in most of these cases.
And the president loves Attorney General Barr up to this point. He was just saying on the radio today that he wishes he'd appointed Bill Barr Attorney General first before Jeff Sessions. So he has a very loyal Attorney General. But in this interview, it's pretty clear that Barr feels that his credibility in some ways is at stake, given what happened in Roger Stone's case, and is trying to back the president off a little bit.
Terry Moran, Pierre Thomas, thanks very much. That exclusive interview, we'll have much more on that, of course, tonight on World News Tonight with David Muir. We return now to your regular programs. Have a good afternoon.
This Roger Stone trial has been improperly handled. They put a gag order on him through most of the trial so that he couldn't speak out. And then after the conviction came in, then they continued that gag order, which many people find is highly unconstitutional. Some people would debate about the gag order originally. Then there were prosecutors, and then there was a foreperson there on the jury that were all biased against Roger Stone. So this has not been a fair trial for Roger Stone. Now the Department of Justice is appointing someone to review the case. And then the other case that is ongoing is General Flynn. And General Flynn's case is just in an uproar also. And it may be dropped or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen on that case. But we have a tremendous uproar and change going on in many of these cases today. Some breaking news occurred earlier this afternoon from Drudge Report stating that maybe Hillary Clinton will be Mike Bloomberg's running mate. In other words, Bloomberg will be running for president. He wants to pull Hillary Clinton in there as vice president. We've got something here, Steve Bannon on an interview that's stating some very insightful things. Here we go with his Steve Bannon interview.
Joining me now in a Waters World exclusive, former Trump White House chief strategist and host of the War Room Pandemic radio show, Steve Bannon. All right, Steve, so what did you think? Best week ever for the president?
Best 2 weeks. I mean, if you look at USMCA, if you look at the Israeli deal, if you look at Ivanka's human trafficking, you know, the counterfeit, Brexit, the pandemic, the bold moves he makes on pandemic. He said in his inauguration address, now comes the hour of action. You've seen he's focused on action, action, action. Well, they've had the nullification project for 2 years, but the nullification project's not going to stop.
It's not going to stop.
They don't have, well, here's why. They don't have the personalities. They don't have big personalities, and they don't have policies. The policies are so far left.
So they have to do it on the down low right now.
It's the total destruction of Donald Trump. That's what their focus
That's
is.
That's all they have.
If we don't think they're going to subpoena, they're going to come back with subpoenas on Bolton. They're going to come back with subpoenas. And this is why I've argued for a long trial in the impeachment, or now get Lindsey Graham. We need to get all this on the table.
Well, right? That's what Lindsey Graham says. Lindsey Graham says he's going to bring the whistleblower in. We could have the second whistleblower come in. Adam Schiff could maybe have to testify. And he's already clearing house with Vindman, and he's recalling Sondland, the EU ambassador.
First off, he needs a clear house. We talked about this in 2017. He needs to get people to support his policies in there to execute this. He deserves that. But I think what President Trump's been saying is not just about him, about future presidents. If one day AOC is the president, she is commander in chief.
What did you just say? It's very hard for me to wrap my head around that analogy.
What I'm trying to say is President Trump is sitting there saying it's not about him. It's about the office of the president.
Right.
We need to vet this. And I think the Senate Judiciary is a place to start. And you bring one of your guests tonight. You bring Rudy Giuliani. Let him have 2 days on national TV in a formal setting and let him be cross. Let him put all the information he has up there.
Well, not only that, you get Where's Hunter? Because right now, and we're going to talk to Rudy about this in a little bit, they're going to actually subpoena some records from the Treasury to see if there was any financial irregularities going on with Hunter, with Burisma, and the Obama administration. You called this CPAC 2017, you said this is what it was going to be like. Let's listen.
Here's why it's going to get worse. Because he's going to continue to press his agenda. And as economic conditions get better, as more jobs get better, they're going to continue to fight. If you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, you are sadly mistaken. Every day it is going to be a fight.
So that was a couple years ago. Did you think it was going to be this ugly?
I thought it was going to be this ugly.
You thought you'd see impeachment in leaks and special.
When counsel? I went around in 18 with the film Trump at War, I said if we lose the House of Representatives, she's promised people she's going to impeach.
That's what it was.
They don't have another alternative. They don't have person. There's nobody on that stage going to beat Donald Trump. There's no set of policies that people galvanize around is going to beat Donald Trump. His economic program is working. His America First national security policy is working. And Trump triggers them.
Right.
I did Bill Maher last night. You go in that crowd, Trump, just the concept of Donald Trump and the deplorables triggers these people.
Yeah, so they were throwing tomatoes at you. Let's listen to a little of Steve versus Bill Maher. Roll that.
We mostly lose because a senator in Wyoming represents 290,000 people, and a senator here represents 20 million. That's mostly why we lose. The Electoral College.
No, it's called a republic, sir.
It's called a republic.
What I love about you guys, you've got to whine about everything. Hey, it's match play, not medal play.
No, I...
Win it, match play.
I understand what the rules are.
Show me you could win. No, you know what the rules are, and you can't win.
You're right. His best week ever. That's what I said. Okay, I wish we had someone on our side as evil as you, Steve. It's great to see you. Thank you for going.
He looked a little depressed there.
Because look at Trump's actions. They don't know what to do next. But I got to tell you, these people are going to continue subpoena. That's why I think Lindsey Graham in the Senate, we've got to vet this. Let's get it all out there. Because let's get the whistleblower. Let's get the second whistleblower. Let's get Brennan up there. Let's get Adam Schiff as a fact
Brennan
witness.
Up there?
Let's get Brennan. Let's get Adam Schiff as a fact witness. Let's get everybody up there, Jesse.
Do you
in front
think
the
Senate Republicans have what it takes for that kind of scorched earth investigation?
I think they owe it. Here's what the Republicans in the Senate, they owe it to this country. This is like the Church Commission. Remember, the excesses of the CIA and the FBI in the 50s and 60s led to the Church Commission after Watergate in the 70s. That's what we need. Lindsey Graham's judiciary has to start it.
Well, you got Durham, too, on the other side.
Do you have a lot of expectation
for Durham or not?
That's a criminal proceeding with a grand jury. However that proceeds, it proceeds. This is something actually more important. This is before the nation to see the abuses against Donald Trump so that we can sit there and what Trump says, it's not about him. This should never happen to another president.
Right.
And what President Trump has said is very important. He's trying to protect the office of the president.
Right. It's about executive power. All right. We talked about this before we came on the air, China and this pandemic, this virus that's going out there, Corona. How big of a threat is this right now? It looks like at this point it's deadlier than the SARS virus. How do you see it?
Well, listen, I think coming to America, President Trump has taken bold and smart action, okay? A couple of weeks ago, he's got this task force. They got the right people on it. He's taken smart measures.
If this thing blows up, is he going to pay a price for acting fast enough?
I think he's acted fast enough.
Do you think he needs a full travel ban yet or no?
Well, listen, I think he's acted fast enough now. Here's the problem, I think, is in China. In China, this is a biblical scale. It's not that the CCP, who I'm very anti, would lie to you. I don't think they have their hands around it. If you want to see what's going on, watch the movie Chernobyl, the 5 episodes. This is a biological Chernobyl. I don't think they have their hands around it because right now they're not the personnel. I think 3 things have to happen. Number 1, the firewall has to come down on the internet so the Chinese people have full access to Western
That's
information.
That's not going to happen.
Well, number 1, I think it has to happen. Number 2, President Trump has offered 3 times the CDC and others, real virus killers, virus hunters to go there. I think the Chinese Communist Party has to accept WHO and CDC members to go. And
virus hunters.
The Dr. Leung in Hong Kong. These are guys that know how to track down these viruses.
Wow.
Number 3, I think medical personnel. You see the collapse of the public health system in Wuhan. Remember, this is a city the size of New York. And right now, it's totally under quarantine. They're going door to door and see who has this.
See, that's the only thing I think that can really slow things down is this virus. But like we said, can Bernie slow down Donald Trump? Can Bloomberg do it. Well, listen, are you handicapping this thing? Look,
here's the bottom line. After the Democratic Party said the president's a clear and present danger because of Russian oligarchs, the Democratic Party now has to rely upon an American oligarch. It's outrageous.
You call him an oligarch.
He's an oligarch.
Why do you call him that?
Because the oligarch. He's made this money over the last couple of years. He's got $70 billion, and he's prepared.
He didn't steal it, though, did he?
No, he made it. But what he's prepared to do is saying, even if he's not the Democratic nominee, he will put $2 billion because of a personal vendetta against Donald Trump to defeat Donald Trump.
That's a lot of cash.
Listen, Bernie, I like Bernie a lot. Bernie's not going to make it, okay? And I keep telling Bernie supporters, they are totally disrespected and discounted by the Democratic Party. They got cheated out of Iowa, out of the poll.
Do you think that was funny business in Iowa, or do you think they're just incompetent?
I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but they're no coincidence. How does the poll not get released when he's up 4, which is always a bounce, and then as soon they don't do the thing right the first night, and then they got to recanvass.
They said some little producer guy, when he resized the poll, he resized it too big, and it cut Buttigieg's name off the bottom.
There are no coincidences.
That's what he said.
Hold it. As soon as Bernie gets in the lead, they want to recanvass. The Bernie voters are not respected by the Democratic Party. They ought to give Trump a listen. Trump respects the Bernie voters. And listen, these guys didn't turn out for Hillary Clinton in 2016. They ought to turn out for Donald Trump in 2020. Because Bernie's not going to be the nominee. Here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
He's coming in. Bloomberg's coming in with all that capital. He's going to let off a thermonuclear capital weapon on Super Tuesday. It's going to shatter this field, and that's when Hillary Clinton, I think, is going to come back out of the bullpen and run with Bloomberg's money, with Dolly Frazier.
If they ride in on Bloomberg's briefcase full of cash.
If they think that Hillary Clinton's going to beat Donald Trump,
they just love saying that.
I love that Dolly Frazier too. But here's the thing:
doesn't Bloomberg need a box? I think the president says he's too short to be on the debate stage. Let's listen to that.
I would love to run against Bloomberg. I would love it. Now he wants a box for the debates. To stand on. Okay, it's okay. There's nothing wrong. You could be short. Why should he get a box to stand on, okay? He wants a box for the debates.
I mean, why should he get a box?
The best ever.
Did he just make that up, or do you know something?
No, I'm sure the president knows something that other people don't know, and he's going to force it. Hey, everybody's got to stand on the platform, right? You don't get a box.
All right, he'll have a box full of cash and a box to stand on. All right, Steve Bannon, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right.
Next, we're going to be explaining why Bernie Sanders' success, both in the Iowa and in the New Hampshire primaries, has occurred. We're getting some of this information today out of today's Wall Street Journal. It's in the review and outlook section, which is the editorial section. Here's some of the ideas that they're putting forward, and I must agree with these major. He's the attack on capitalism and markets, like Tony Blair in Britain, so forth. That's one of the things that Sanders has been doing. The rise of left-wing intolerance on campuses, this feeds right in to Bernie Sanders' major dynamics. Number three, the critique of America is irredeemable, stating that the founding fathers were racist from the very beginning. Climate change is religion and not science. This has been, you could say nurtured into our very school system, from the kindergarten onward and through our public broadcast systems and so forth. So we've had just a regular program, public out there. The attack that the left has launched against capitalism is unwarranted because they're not separating capitalism from crony capitalism. I support the attacks on crony capitalism because I've also launched some attacks myself, I guess, because I believe in pure capitalism and not crony capitalism is what we're subject to now. Anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you out there for listening and supporting us. We're trying to bring a little bit of truth, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I, to the forefront here. And this week has been very tumultuous. You've got the Roger Stone attacks and General Flynn. That was a setup job. We hope that, you know what I mean? We've got to help bring some of these people out of these problems and support them with our money and our publicity. But thank you very much for listening, and good night. God bless everyone.